Rewinding Kaya FM on FM Rewind.
On Kaya FM 95.9.
Welcome back to Kaya Biz. I'm now joined by property expert Ntato Rabashaga, and he's going to talk us through buying your first home. Thank you so much for joining me in studio this evening.
Thanks for having me.
So, you know, I was saying earlier that when I bought my first property many years ago, you know, I had to save up for a very long time just to like pull together, I think like 2,500 or 5,000 rand as a deposit. This was a long time ago. But I had completely forgotten about the transfer costs. Well, I didn't know. I didn't know about, you know, the transfer costs and the lawyer's fees and all of that. And I essentially found myself so deep in debt. I was writing out checks like for 6 months in order to pay off all of that. But that's what I was saying. It's so important to understand what goes into buying a property, because it is a big deal and it's very expensive.
True, and it costs a lot. I mean, just looking at the costs of buying a property, these are what I term the hidden costs of buying a property. You literally divide them into two. There's once-off costs and ongoing costs. The once-off costs, however, are a big issue because they are a cash payment. So what that means is that when you buy a house, as you've said, you'll need a deposit. So usually you put down a 10% deposit. So if you're buying a house for 1 million rents, that's 100,000 deposit. It takes quite a while to put up that sum of money. Then you have to consider bank initiation fee. When you're opening a bond, they charge around just over 6,000 for a bank initiation fee. If you don't pay that cash, they add it to your bond. That means you're going to pay it over 20 years. That's 6,000.
What is an initiation fee for?
When you open the bond, they charge you that bank initiation fee. It's just by the banks.
What do they use it for?
I don't know. I guess it improves their profits.
I have an issue with
that. Definitely. We also do that. Then you have what you call the transfer duty. People usually mistaken this with transfer fees, and they're totally different. A transfer duty is a tax that you pay to SARS. So for houses that are 900,000 and below, you are exempt from paying the transfer duty. However, for every amount above 900,000, you pay the duty.
And the transfer fees is paying to transfer it from the previous owner to you.
Yes. Talking about transfer fees, when you buy from a developer, there are no transfer fees. They are included in the cost because that property has never been registered in anyone's name at the deeds. But however, when you buy from a person who owns the house and it is registered under their name, then the house has to be transferred from their name to yours. Those are the transfer fees. In basic, it's the lawyer fees for transferring. However, you have more than that. If you're not buying the house cash, then you're taking out a bond. Then you need bond registration fees because the house has to be registered under a bond. You don't own the house yet. It belongs to the bank. So you pay those fees. Then you have moving costs. People don't bring too much attention to that, but it's a large sum of money. You find I'm buying a house in Durban and I live in Joburg. I have furniture that I need to move. I have a lot of things that I need to move. It's a lot of money. Again, you have occupational rent. When you buy a house, it takes around, if using good lawyers, at maximum 3 months to transfer it from the previous owners to you. During that 3 months, the house belongs to its owner. It's not yours. It only belongs to you upon date of registration at the deeds office. So if you want to move in, you have to pay occupational rent to the seller.
Can you decide, okay, while we're waiting for registration, I'll just stay where I'm staying and I'll move in when...
Yeah, of course. Usually that's what we encourage. It's just better. But again, let's look at other costs. They are what you call ongoing costs, as I mentioned before. These are your bond repayments monthly. These are your rates and taxes for your property.
Before we get there, I just want to go back to the transfer fees. Yeah. Is there a calculation for that? Like how you have a 10% deposit? How does it work? How much do you have to pay?
If you check at the transferring attorneys' websites, most of them, you get on their websites and you have to input the amount of the property that you are buying. Then they will tell you how much of transfer fees you have to pay. It is regulated to the amounts, so they don't just willy-nilly charge those amounts. You can actually prepare for that. You can estimate them to around 95% accurate.
Okay, so take us through the other fees.
The other fees are your rates and taxes that you have to pay on your property. Then we have your life and credit insurance. This is very important. When you buy a house, you need to have life insurance. When you don't have it, the banks will offer you what we call credit insurance.
Mm-hmm.
I would never advise anyone to take credit insurance. This is insurance on your life for that specific credit. So it means after you have paid for your house and you fully paid for it, it disappears. However, if you took the same amount of money and put it in a life insurance, you would then have an extra 5 to 10 million of life insurance cover that your kids can inherit. You just add it to your life insurance and then cede that portion.
And we are talking property. I'm speaking to property expert Ntato Rabashaga, and we are exploring, I think, the biggest tips for you before you buy your home. And there is quite a bit that goes into it. So Kaya Biz is going to be doing a four-part series in this month. It's Youth Month as well. So we're going to be unpacking this every Monday so that you can, you know, you can tune in, send questions, anything you want to know. But we are going to be talking about property and what you need to know before you get into it. Tato, before we went to the break, we were talking about all the different costs. So we also don't want to, because I'm terrified just listening to that. I am thinking that maybe it was good that I didn't know all of these payments, about all of these payments before I got into it, because then I was there and then I had to dig myself out of it. But I suppose it's good to have a bit of a checklist and make sure that you have all of these things together before you actually, you know, undertake buying a property.
Yeah, definitely. I'd always advise people, find a great real estate agent to use. Mm-hmm. They would advise
what
you.
What makes a great real estate agent? How would you know?
I'm a real estate agent, and I operate throughout the rest of South Africa, and my clients, most of them are happy because I put their needs first. It's very important. As an estate agent, you need to listen to your client, ensure that you meet almost all their needs. It's not about me. It's not about the profit. I understand that I get a commission, but that's just a by the way.
So as an estate agent, do you also advise them, you know, this is what your financial position is looking at,
yes,
looking like at this point, whether you should be buying, whether you should wait a bit. Are those the kind of things that you discuss with them?
Yes, definitely. I'm also a wealth coach. So I sit down with a lot of people before they buy a house. I want to buy a house. So we then discuss their finances and I check their financial situation. The worst thing that you can do is to just jump and buy a house without properly planning.
Mm.
It can literally turn into a disaster and you will hate that process. So you plan. You plan properly. And then once we have that, then we understand your finances are in check. We understand the costs that are involved, whether you can afford them or not. If you cannot afford them, then you save up for them. Then I also give you some tips. How do you go about saving for them? The easiest thing to do, if your total cost for the house, including all the other fees, it's around 10,000 a month, and currently your rental is 6,000, save the extra 4,000, because either way, when you buy that house, you'll be paying that extra 4,000. So let's see how your life changes the next 2 to 3 months when you put that money away.
So if somebody says, no, let me rather just keep on renting, what would you say to them?
I guess there are pros and cons to buying versus renting. There was a survey that was released just early 2019 by F&B. 50% of people who were distressed financially selling their homes opted for renting. The other 50% opted to buy a lower house. So they moved from a 3-bed to a 1-bed or a 2-bed. So you check at them. The first thing to do is to evaluate your financial decision. Evaluate your financial circumstances and understand where you stand. I'll just take you through the things that you would consider renting versus buying. Let's check the good, the bad, the ugly. In terms of renting, the good is you don't pay maintenance fees of the property. It's paid by the owner. You don't pay rates and taxes of the property. You don't pay transfer duties. You don't pay lawyer fees. And it requires usually a smaller deposit. That's around 1 month of your rental amount. Then the most, the biggest thing that's advantageous for renting is you are mobile. If I get a job in Durban, I can cancel my lease. I move to Durban. I don't have to worry about my house and another person in there. And the rental amount is usually fixed for 12 months. So whether the interest rate hikes or not, you know I'm paying 4,000 a month and it's standard. Also, you get access to amenities if you are in an estate that you don't pay for. They're being paid by the owner of the house. However, there is the bad of it. There is no wealth creation. when you are renting
and
a
property.
And that's
the big one.
It is the big one. Mm. You'll have nothing to leave to your kids. Mm. There is power in ownership. When you go, just think about it. When you go to a dealership and you want to buy a car, the first thing they ask, do you own a house? What do you own? Mm-hmm. If you want a loan, what do you have? What can you put up as surety? You have nothing. And also, we check there are rental fluctuations now. You find that I was once renting when I started working. The rental amount within 3 years moved from 2,600 to 4,000. That's a lot of money.
Mm.
Also, there is no guarantee your lease will be renewed. This is very important. You stay at a place, you like it, your kids like the schools, and then at the end of the lease, they say, no, thank you, you can go. It's not your house. The biggest thing that people suffer from is that the house gets sold while you stay there. Then you get a 2 months notice and you have to move. You made no decision that you want to move. You had no intention of moving, but you have no ownership. So when they say leave, you leave. Also, you can't make changes to the property. It's not your property. So in terms of having your kids and you also want to add things there, it becomes quite an issue. Now let's look at buying. With rental increases over the past 5-10 years, they've been higher than the increase in the bond repayments amount. And that's quite a good thing for people who own houses. Then you have the benefit of price rises in the property. I bought my first property undervalued. Now, even if I decide to sell it now at market value, I'm going to make some profit. Also, you may buy to lease. You don't necessarily have to stay in a house. I can buy it.
You buy it as an investment.
Definitely. Mm-hmm. And put in someone to pay the bond for you. You'd only pay the minimal costs, around 20% of it. But after 10 years, you'll own the property. I don't advocate for people paying for a property over 20 years, but that's a topic for another day. Also, it gives financial security.
You don't advocate for it, but we can't get around it.
You can, actually.
Well, apart from paying a little bit extra every month. So the bond payments are so high as it is. But this is the point where you say, even if it's $100, put it in.
Yeah.
Explain that.
Well, I mean, if you pay just 10% extra on your monthly bond repayments, it moves the duration of your bond from 20 years to 13 years.
Mm.
That's 7 years worth of money that you've saved in interest, but most importantly, in the bank fees. The bank charges around 68 rands every month for your bond amount. When you pay that in 7 years earlier, you also save those 68 rands. It may seem like nothing, but over 7 years, it's around 5,000. That's a lot of money.
I think it's also important, and I mean, you know, taking out a bond, a home loan, is a long term. You usually take it out over 20 years, and then you pay interest. If you're just paying the installment, you're paying for the first 10 years, you're just paying off interest, and then after 10 years, you start actually paying the bond off.
Definitely.
I think just getting your head around that is also, that's tough. That's tough. And it takes a long time to get your head around that. For me, what's important, and people often get trapped in that and just managing the payments every month on the home loan. But the home loan is affected by interest rates. So if you have two interest rate hikes in 1 year, then your bond payment's gone up. But if you're living in, say, paying 5,000 rand a month towards the home loan, and that's all you have, and you have two interest rate hikes, for instance, in the year, then that 5,000 is going to become, what, 5,500 or something?
Yeah, definitely.
And that's how you... So when I say get your head around it, is always look at these long-term loans as long-term loans. So look at the full impact of it. So you're buying the house for 500,000, but by the time you finish paying it off, you probably paid a million,
1.5 million, actually.
This for me was, wow. You know, when you look at those figures, it's just like buying a car. So people often tend to just look at, and, you know, I made this mistake earlier on, you know, when I started buying assets. You tend to just look at what you can pay off every month, but you don't realize over the 5-year term or over the 20-year term that you're actually paying double, sometimes triple.
true. I mean, Einstein once said, compound interest is the eighth wonder of the world. Those who don't understand it, paid. Those who understand it, earn it.
It took me a while.
Definitely. So it's important to understand that. And I mean, what I advocate for is the concept of delayed gratitude and instant gratification. Just because the bank says we can give you a bond of 1 million does not necessarily mean you must rush out there, run and go buy a house for 1 million. All they mean is your ceiling is 1 million. So what I tell people is buy a house for 500,000.
Yeah.
Then by so doing, a house for 500,000, just thumbs up, is around 5,000 payment per month. But you know that you afford 10,000. If you pay 10,000 a month, in 5 years, you will own that house, irrespective of the interest rate you were charged.
But I think it's very important to do these calculations. Yes. Understand what you're paying up front.
Definitely.
Even if it's going to be over the next 10, 15 or 20 years, understand now, today, in present day, how much you are going to be outlaying.
Yeah. And also, in terms of the finances, you need to plan. Properly plan. Check your credit score. This is important if you are going to take out a home loan. If your credit score is below good, the banks add 1 to 2% on your interest. That extra 2% can add the value of the interest that you pay on your mortgage by 32%. Just an extra 2%.
I think these lessons are so valuable. Unfortunately, we have run out of time, but you are going to be back next week, Monday.
Definitely.
And the Monday after that and the Monday after that. So thank you very much for your insights. And Ntato Rabashaga is a property expert.
With Kukuletu Mfupi on Kaya FM 95.9.
Rewinding Kaya FM on FM Rewind. Visit kayafm.co.za.